to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and this is podcast episode number 130, and it is mid-June 2012. So very exciting. Today I have a fantastic interview with the author of the Creative Genius Program. It's an Audible program, Phil South, about how we can improve our creativity, which I don't know about you, but it's something that I am fascinated with and something I think we all obsess over a little bit, you know, how we can improve our creativity, how to generate original ideas, how to keep coming up with them over time. And sometimes that scary moment when you think you've lost your creativity and really all you need is a break. So, and that little break is my first update, as I've just got back from a 9 days holiday in the Languedoc area of the south of France with my husband. And it was really primarily a break. I didn't do any writing, well, any official writing. I did journal writing, but I didn't do any writing on my fiction or anything else. I really took time off, didn't do the internet, didn't do Twitter. So it was very good. I read a lot, and it's an area famous for Cathar castles as well as its wine, of which I may have indulged in a few glasses. The Cathars were a religious sect that I studied as part of my theology degree back in the days. They were Christians who were persecuted by the Catholic Church and basically massacred and wiped out for their slightly different beliefs. So it was really fascinating for me to be there and to kind of soak up the history and just relax, and also a good time for reflection on what I'm doing. What am I, about 9 months into being a full-time author entrepreneur, and so I really have to think about, you know, what I'm doing with my work. And I came up with this. My big aha moment was this statement: my job is to create a body of work that I'm proud of and that resonates with people. And that's it, really. So that is my job every day, is to work towards that, which is creating this body of work. So it's kind of, stunning in its simplicity, but important for me because, you know, people define themselves by what they do and their jobs, and that is my job now. It is being an author entrepreneur, but more than that, creating a body of work. So I'm learning to say no to a lot of things that come up if they don't work towards that goal. So I need to make sure I evaluate everything, and it's going to be guiding what I do going forwards. So I don't know if you have also had that kind of thought around what is your job as it relates to writing, and your what is important about the work we do. So I'd love to know what you think about this or any of the podcasts. You can always email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com, pen with a double N, or Twitter @thecreativepen. So also on holiday, I did an awful lot of reading, a lot of fiction and non-fiction, and I review books on Goodreads. I do also review on Amazon, but Goodreads, I'm trying to keep a good track of everything I read. So if you follow me on Goodreads, you can check out some of what I was reading. One of the books on my list was Jonah Lehrer's Imagine: How Creativity Works, which is a great book, I highly recommend. And it's non-fiction, obviously, and I wanted to tell you three specific things that I learned from the book that I thought you might find interesting. And it also relates to the conversation with Phil that's going to come next. So I have pages and pages of notes in my diary from the book, but I wanted just to share three. So the first one is that people who consistently daydream score significantly higher in creativity measures, which is awesome because it means that we can lie around daydreaming, and that's part of the process. But no, all joking aside, I think that is important. And I did feel that when I was away. I had this marvellous, we were staying in a 17th century chateau, which was gorgeous. And I had a room with a view. If you know the E.M. Foster novel and the movie, it's one of my favourites. So it was lovely to kind of sit on this chaise lounge and look out at my view and just think. And that space for thinking in time to just let the mind wander is really important. And I need to know that because I'm a manic productivity nutter. You know, if I don't have something to show productivity wise for my day, I get quite upset. So I need to be reminded that daydreaming is fine and that we're allowed that time and that space to do nothing. Or it looks like we're doing nothing, but we're actually writing. So yeah, that's important. So that's number one. Number two, is that it was really great the way he kind of put it, is that there's a worry that creativity won't happen this time, and every time we finish a project there's this worry that we won't be able to be creative the next time and that the creativity will dry up and we won't be able to finish the next project or come up with ideas or make it work. And it's kind of like we're empty and then we need to start again, and this happens in ebbs and flows over time. And this resonated with me as I'm, you know, currently working through Exodus, my third novel, and there are moments when I just think this just isn't working, it's just not going to work. And there I'm trying to weave together some quite disparate sort of theological concepts, which the story kind of weaves in and out of. But sometimes I feel like, oh my goodness, maybe the first two novels were flukes and I won't be able to finish this one. And then I know that's a load of crap, but you know, I think you probably know what I mean, is that kind of that worry that it won't happen this time, but it will. I know it will, and it will for you too. And the third thing is that art is work and creativity is a verb, and a time-consuming verb at that, which I like very much, because this is work. And that's why I like, you know, as I said earlier, that I'm creating a body of work. My job is to create a body of work, and the work is part of what makes it worthwhile. So yeah, art is work, creativity is a verb. We have to take an idea and make it real, which is also what Stephen Pressfield talks about in The War of Art, which is just such a brilliant book. And it's not easy, and the resistance will try and stop us, but we need to persist. And Lehrer also says grit is one of the most important predictors of creative success, which is the ability to stick with it over time. And I really like that too, because as I'm finding with this podcast, for example, which now has I think 5,000 listeners, which is very exciting. You know, when I started there was no listeners, and with my blog when I started there was nobody, and now it's quite successful after almost 4 years. And with my novels, you know, there was nothing, and then there was a book, and then there was two books, and then there'll be three books. And in I'm 37 and I hope to still be writing when I'm 87, you know. I hope I have 40 or 50 years in me of doing this. So grit being an important predictor of creative success gives me hope that we can, if we stick with this over time, then we're going to make it. So I am very excited by all of that, as ever. So I definitely recommend the book Imagine by Jonah Lehrer. And of course, it's available on Amazon and all the usual bookstores. Okay, so on with the interview with Phil South, when we're going to talk about more about creativity. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepenn.com, and today I'm talking with Phil South. Phil is a British writer, filmmaker, and coach. He has a new creative genius program available called Writing Fit, which we're talking about today. So welcome, Phil.
Hello. Thank you for having me on the show.
No worries, and nice to meet you after so long online.
Yes, yes, we've only written to each other before now. It's the first time we've actually clapped eyes on each other, isn't it?
It is marvellous. So tell us a bit about you and your writing background, and I guess how your experiences have led you to this point.
I've been a writer for about 30 years, as you know, but obviously people listening to this don't know. I was writing formerly for magazines, computer magazines. magazines. Well, I call them computer magazines. They were actually game magazines, you know, so computer games. I got paid for 15 years to play computer games.
Cool.
Which, you know, sounds like a dream job, doesn't it? But not necessarily as much as you'd think. So I was writing, and I kind of did a lot of sideward moves into other types of magazines, did a little bit of music journalism and stuff like that. And then I got, because of all the stuff I was doing was all about creative sort of uses for technology, you know, started out with word processors, then it was video editing, then it was graphics software, then it was music software. And I became an expert in creative software, and that's led me to become a contractor making multimedia for back in the days when they called it multimedia. They don't call it that anymore. Back in CD-ROM days, I became an independent contractor and animator, and did some lovely work for Disney Channel. For about 4 years, which was wonderful, working, you know, making animations for kids with kids, which was wonderful. After all this lovely work, there was a traumatic period in my life. It was an illness of my spouse, and when she got better, then divorce, and then I got the kids. So I was bringing up a couple of crazy kids on my own, and they're very tall and beautiful and lovely now, but they were a bit sort of young and confused. But and as such a creative person, I mean, I've just run through a few of the things that I've done, you know, sort of filmmaking, teaching, photography, writing, cartoonist, animator, all those things. Throughout this traumatic time, couldn't produce anything, not a thing. And I was more fascinated by the fact that I couldn't than actually worrying about trying to do something. And subsequently, over the you know, intervening sort of 10 years, I read everything I possibly could about creativity, where it comes from, and how, and people's creative process, and lots of stuff about how the brain works. And because I'm a little bit sciencey, you know, I got a little bit of a science bent, so. But I also have a kind of a mind-body-spirit side as well, which led me to read all kinds of sort of out-of-the-way kind of mystical texts as well, just to see how they married up to the scientific ones. And just gathering everything I could find about it, reading literally everything I could lay my hands on about creativity and the way that it works, and subsequently found a lot of common ground in amongst all those things. So that's really, it came out of trauma.
that's fantastic. And I think a lot of people will, you know, find that resonant with them, because, you know, a lot of people find trauma will either create creativity or stop it.
Definitely. Finding all this sort of common ground, I mean, it led me to believe, because in the intervening 10 years as well, I lost all my lost everything, but I lost all my, work as well, so I had to kind of retrain, and I had I worked as a teacher for about 7 years, and then it dawned on me that it maybe could be taught. You know, all this information that I've gathered, if it's possible to specify something, it's possible to teach it, you know. So and that's when all this, you know, that's when this plot hatched in my mind.
Fantastic. So having a look at the course, one of the things that strikes me immediately is that you say that the brains of best-selling authors and creatives are different somehow. And what do you mean by that? And I guess, how do they become that way so we can all do it too?
Yeah. Well, obviously the longer explanation is, you know, in the course, but the shorter explanation is creative people get this way. What makes them special is that they accidentally develop their brains in this way. They accidentally develop their brains to form stronger pathways in the areas of the brain that deal with creativity. And they do this by repetition, of course. You know, we all know that repetition is good for any activity, like a sport or something like that, or driving a car even. I often use driving metaphors. It's irritating, because every once in a while I get someone who says, I say, you know, when you're driving a car, and they go, no. You know, so it's like, but when you drive in a car, there's lots of stuff that you know how to do without thinking. And a lot of writing is like that. You know, a lot of it is mechanical kind of muscle memory or you know, brain memory, and the facility of coming up with an idea and having it go seamlessly from your brain down to your fingertips is a skill that takes repetition. And that's a part of it. And so, you know, there's no easy ride with CGP. You can't just say, oh, well, I'm not going to practice. I'm not going to write. I'm just going to do CGP and cut the corner. You still have to do the practice. There's another part of it as well. There's several components to it. One is the physical, the muscle memory. The second part of it is a brain state, a special kind of brain state, but a lower brainwave state that people who are creative get into. It's called an alpha state, because, you know, there's like different brainwave states. There's like beta, which is what we're both in now because we're awake and talking. Then there's alpha, which is a level below that, which is what happens after we stop talking and I start staring out the window. and then there's theta and delta and gamma and all the other Greek letters all the way down to the center of the earth. And those are basically asleep and in a coma and downwards from there. Alpha states are interesting because they're partway between completely conscious and half asleep. Lots of scientists, actual real white-coated scientists, have done work on this where they've actually shoved people into a functional MRI when they're being creative. They've got jazz musicians and rappers, I think. And they made them improvise whilst in an MRI. And it turns out there's a guy called Charles Lim, I think, Dr. Charles Lim. And just so that people can go look it up. He did a TED talk once. It was fabulous. And he basically discovered that what happens in a creative state is that people have a way of they basically practiced turning off their conscious mind to a certain degree, which is why you often find writers say that they have a special place or a special position, a special window they look out of when they get their most creative, because that allows them to just detune their brain a little bit, and allow them to get to that state.
Yeah, and a lot of people will say that they get really good ideas in the shower or on the treadmill, which is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would thoroughly recommend, you know, physical activity as part of the writing regime, because obviously it's a solitary and sedentary lifestyle and it's much healthier to get out there and do stuff.
That's true.
But it's actually very, very important because the way that creativity and indeed all brain processes work is like when you go to the gym and you do a really heavy workout. And you feel dead. You feel like you can never lift your limbs again. And you feel like that somebody's going to have to, gurney you out to your car and pour you into it because you can't move. And the next day you ache all over. You can't move again. And gradually over the day you get function back to your arms and legs. But the next day it hardly hurts at all and you feel stronger. It's a bit like that. You know, you have if you spend lots of time in a sort of a alpha brainwave state, turning ideas over in your head, you might not get any ideas right then. You know, you might not get your best idea right then. You might get a few things, but you know, because you have to approach this thing in a kind of a non-judgmental way, you don't push it in any direction. You just kind of let it go, let it turn over. And if you get nothing, then, okay, you say, well, I've got nothing. Okay, leave it. Go for the run. Go get on the treadmill.
Get in the shower.
Go in the shower, yeah, you know, because, you know, it's warm. You need to go in the shower. And go for a long country walk and stare at nature, you know. Turning the idea over in your mind kind of set your subconscious processing it. It's like you've written the program. You know, and your subconscious then chews on it, which is why often after you've had an initial idea and pondered it for a while, randomly an idea pops seemingly out of nowhere, you know, later on when you're doing something else, when your conscious mind is engaged on something else or defocused.
Yeah, and I like the idea about that if you use the creative muscle, it becomes easier, because I used to think that I wasn't creative at all. I had that kind of block of I'm not creative. Yeah. And I started off by saying, you know, I am creative and trying to think that way. And then the more, and I really found that the more I had, I started to have little ideas, and then the more I thought about it, the more ideas have come. And I really feel like I've become more creative over the last four years.
Yes, I'm saying I would say that's almost certainly true. I mean, the more you use it, the more you have. I've as part of my research and also my interest, because I'm interested in health and you know, how you get, you know, to the right weight and how you maintain your health. And bodily processes, it seems to me, are always supply on demand. You know, if you don't demand stamina, you don't get any.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't demand, I'm out of ideas. all of a sudden, I've dried on bodily processes for some reason. I don't know why. But it's like that with ideas. The more ideas you get, the more ideas you get. You know, and it's because you kind of clean the road between your subconscious and your conscious mind, and it's. It's once you use those parts of your brain enough and in the right way, it becomes a lot easier over time. You know, and that's one of the things. You know, the more you do it, the more easily you slip into that mental state, and you also know what that state feels like, so you can work towards it sort of internally.
And I also feel that you sometimes have an idea that perhaps you just need to get out there, so write some words on it or something, and then another idea will come after that you wouldn't have got unless you'd actually got out that first idea.
I think
a lot of people get stuck there, you know, get stuck on that first idea. And I like the fact you mentioned being non-judgmental about it, because people become this sort of perfectionist over the first idea, whereas if they just got it out of the way, they could move on to the better one.
Absolutely I also use a gardening analogy. When you if you think about ideas, desire for ideas and flow, you know, sort of creative flow as a plant process, what you do when you want to grow a plant, you plant the seed, you water it, and you let nature take its course. You kind of let it go the way it wants to go. You know, it will grow up, or it will grow out sideways towards the sun, or whatever. You just need to let it do what it does, because you can't pull it out. You know, you can't pull the idea and stretch it and see it until it's as tall as you want it to be. Yeah, that's 300. That's 300 pages. That's perfect. You know, you can't force the issue. You have to let it take its course, and you can't also run around the garden getting other leaves from other plants and sellotaping them onto it to make it more bulky. You know, and that's the problem with ideas, and that's the classic rookie mistake with ideas. As you know yourself, you know, you get two or three ideas and you think, this is a wonderful story, I really need to add some bulk to this, because it's not quite, you know, it's not quite gelling. So you try and the impulse is to force the issue and tack stuff on and give people random names that you just thought up at the time, and you know, and they go places and they do things, but you've got no idea why, you know, that sort of thing. And if the ideas grow organically, if they grow of their own accord, and you allow your subconscious to do the processing and do the work to develop the ideas and pop out more ideas. Everything you do and everything you write has a kind of internal consistency. And that's the reason that often with sort of artists and writers, their fans say to them, you know, where do you get your ideas from? A, most annoying question in the world. But B, often they don't know, you know, often they really don't
know.
It's
funny you say that, because this is something I'm quite hot on, because I feel that for me, personally, I guess a lot of my ideas come from going places, settings, books I read. You know, I do a lot of non-fiction research for my novels. And actually, you know, taking the gardening analogy, you do have to have some fertile soil. You can't just sit at your desk in a blank room and create something. You actually have to fill yourself up before you can create.
That's true. That is true. But there is also a danger with that. I mean, the thing is that what you're doing with those things that you do is those are kind of your inspirations. Those are kind of your inspirational objects, if you like. And they kind of inform the process because they give you your subconscious kind of fuel to add to the ideas. But consciously taking something from one place and putting it in another, that sometimes doesn't work because it doesn't really have that internal consistency. It doesn't really have that kind of, because the subconscious is crazily huge and crazily complex, you know. And it can make connections that you can't make, which is why, you know, when people say, when you wrote that thing, did you notice that the name that you called the company is actually an anagram of, you know, blah? And you're like, no, that's fascinating and really ingenious, but no way, I didn't even know that. You know, but you subconsciously, you may have done that, you know, because your subconscious is that clever, you know. And that's the thing, you know, everything you write is so much more rich if you allow the subconscious to make the connections, you know.
But I also want to, you know, it's great to have flow and it's great to have the inspiration and all of that. But also people actually need to have some discipline, don't they, in order to take an idea and actually create something from that. So Stephen King calls it bum glue.
A phrase I'd never heard before, but I laughed a lot.
Because you have to have the discipline to sit there. And he says, don't wait for the muse. Sit down and do your words and the muse will appear. Yeah. So what do you think about that?
I think it's a bit like what we've part of this. There's many parts to that. One is the thing we said before. You said before about you just got to get stuff out there. You know, some of the ideas you just got to get them down and get them out of your head. The second thing is I make a distinction between writing and typing. You know, and I think if you have enough ideas and you have enough ideas that are internally consistent, the ideas have a kind of weight of their own, you know, and you can ask this little, I'm holding my hands here because I imagine this thing is like a ball of rubber bands or something, you know, you ask the cluster of ideas any question you like and the answer will present itself because there's a lot of ideas in there. There's a lot of internal consistency. In that instance, you don't have to make yourself sit down because you basically can't barely type fast enough to get the ideas out, you know. And that's the situation of professional writers like Mr. Stephen King and yourself, who basically have all the ideas that they need. And in fact, you've probably got an excess of ideas by this point, you know, and you don't necessarily have to force yourself to sit down. It's just making the time because you've just got to get this thing typed. You know, it's a bit like that. I think it's important for beginning writers to practice a lot, you know, but I'm not necessarily sure that that if you haven't got any ideas, sitting there is forcing yourself to sit there is not going to produce much in the way of extra value.
Well, I will say that I'm still a beginning writer, of course, and I have so many ideas, but what's difficult for me is getting the words out. I think the actual, and what seems to happen for me is that what's in my head, it's very difficult to get what's in your head into something that looks like what was in your head on the page. So it is actually the typing of the ideas that for me is harder. And I have so many ideas, it's just, you know, culling them.
Well, that's what I see. You see, you started the idea mill going, the old flywheel's going and the ideas are spitting out like bullets, you know.
It is hard. But let's get to specifics. So for people listening, if people are not feeling very creative, what are three things that they can do to make them, you know, move towards being more creative?
Okay. I'll tell you the first three things that pop out of my head are one of the reasons that people don't have a lot of ideas is because there's a lot of noise in 21st century life. And by noise, I don't mean sound. I mean input, really, media. And so I would say reduce the noise in your life, you know. Don't turn the TV on when there's nothing to do, you know. Sit in silence. It's actually not fatal, I hear.
I'm glad you said that because I got rid of the TV over 4 years ago and that's when things started happening.
You miss it? Yeah, not at all. No. The TV will still be there when you get back. You know, it's like EastEnders will still be pretty much look the same, you know, and any soap opera that you happen to watch will pretty much look the same. I watched Home and Away the other day and it looks pretty much the same as it did the last 10 years ago when I first saw it. reduce the noise in your life, because it gives you space to think, and it gives you space to turn these ideas over in your mind. Because you know, how are you going to think about something if you've constantly got music going into your ears, or you're reading newspapers full of other people's ideas, or you're watching news programs, you know, terrified something bad's going to happen. You know, everything will wait. You know, everything that's going on in the world can wait, and you can just sit in perfect blissful silence and have ideas. Speaking of which, I always advocate meditation, and I know people sort of say, "Oh, really? Meditation? That's a bit kind of hippie trippy, isn't it?" But meditation is something that lots and lots of people, lots and lots of creative people, swear by. And if nothing else, it gives training yourself to sit in silence or sit listening to peaceful music will, at the very least, give you that break in the day where you can think, you know, and where you can just clear your mind of any junk that's in it. And your thoughts and your ideas are that much more pure when you've got, you know, a lack of noise and a bit of serenity in your life. If you're not a Buddhist meditation master and you can't sit in the lotus position, that doesn't matter, because you can get little high-tech things for your phone like I have, which play isochronic beats very much like the ones I use in the course in your ear, which actually your brain synchronizes to the frequency of the beat. It actually brings your brainwave level right down, and you can sit and relax, and it's surprisingly easy to do, and so I'd highly recommend that. And the third, that's two things. Third thing is, I'm holding my fingers up, you can't see. Third thing is learn stuff. You know, learn as much as you can about everything that takes your fancy, especially things you're interested in, you know, in your case, you know, guns and ammunition and you know, explosives and whatnot. And in my case, you know, sort of brain, you know, diagrams of how the brain puts together. Learn stuff as much as possible, and especially languages, because if you think about it, that if you learn another language, you're completely upsetting your concept of language, you know, in your internally in your brain, and it will freshen a lot of previously stale areas of your cortex that were dealing with language and conceptualizing things. So learning languages is fabulous for enhancing creativity. Plus, you know, when you travel to those places, you're completely fluent, so it's an amazing time saver.
Yeah, no, fantastic. Okay, so where can people find you and the course online?
You can find the website is writingfit.com.
Thank you for that, Phil. Well, thanks for your time. That was great.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.